Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC here on ESPN Plus. I'm Dan Thomas. Coming up on today's show, Shaka Hislop will be here to discuss a series of initiatives that have been announced by MLS to combat racism. We've also got Archie and Steve here to look ahead to some of those big matches in the Champions League. We start, though, in the Premier League, where there have been a lot of surprises this season. One that certainly won't go under that banner is the first 0-0 draw of the campaign was played out today between West Brom and Burnley. In the other match, we saw Wolves win 1-0 away against Leeds, moving them up to sixth in the table. As we welcome Julian Aron and Stevie Nicol into the show. Boys, I don't think we'll talk about those games, but I do want to talk about Virgil van Dijk, of course, the big story. His injury, meaning he's probably out for the rest of the season. Stevie, it's the first time we've been on. Your reaction and how this will affect Liverpool's title chances?
Well, I think my reaction is like 99% of everybody else. It was should have been a red card on Pickford, first and foremost. As far as how it affects Liverpool, well, I think we know how it's going to affect Liverpool. You know, before they sign him and Alisson, Liverpool could score plenty of goals, were strong in the middle of the park, but couldn't defend, and certainly couldn't defend against teams who were breaking on them. So the fact that Virgil van Dijk is now out for the rest of the season, I think the only thing we can foresee is Liverpool struggling with teams countering against them. And of course, you talk about Virgil van Dijk, you add Alisson to that, because those two players were the catalyst for Liverpool stepping up to a completely different zone in terms of what the team was all about. So I think we know what's going to come. It just depends whether Liverpool can outscore teams every time they step on the field.
So if I was to ask you for your prediction now, Stevie, who would win the title? Would you change your mind from Liverpool?
I would say there's probably four teams who are going to duke it out, and it's difficult. You could find an argument for and against why one of these four teams could win. So, yeah, I still think Liverpool can still win the Premier League, yes, but I'm certainly not anywhere as close to being comfortable as I was, certainly this time last week.
Would you share those four teams, or is it a secret?
No, not at all. I think Liverpool, City, Tottenham and Chelsea, for me, are the four sides that are going to be competing for this title. And right now, after what, four games, it's very difficult. It's very difficult to look, and well, it's tough to think that anybody else can join that four, put it that way. And I think those four sides, there's not an awful lot between them.
Everton fans would suggest that they've done enough at the start of this season to be in that conversation, Stevie, especially given, let's not forget, Ancelotti's side don't have any European complications this season.
No, absolutely no doubt. That is a huge, huge lift for any Everton fan that they don't have that. Listen, the likes of Leicester, I think that's probably why they ended up winning the Premier League, because they could just play from week to week and get plenty of rest. It's far too early to start talking about Everton competing for the Premier League Championship. You know, if anything, I think we can talk about trying to challenge for the top five or six.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, it is four games. And yes, they have been impressive, but it's four games. You know, you can't go from the bottom of the table pretty much, or it's very unusual to go from the bottom of the table and sit at the top of the Premier League for the season. I don't see it happening, but yes, they'll be settling the top half of the table.
Jules, where do you stand on Liverpool's title chances overall, given that Van Dijk's out?
I think that's just blown open even more, the title race, really. I agree with Stevie. I think now you've got far more teams that are capable of winning it. The one who would be the most consistent, they all have flaws anyway, because of their own making or not, because of injuries or things like this. They all have problems in a way. Maybe we're right. Maybe Everton, we just only to focus on the Premier League, will have a huge advantage, certainly over the others, who not only had no pre-season to get ready, but now will play in such a congested season with so many fixtures. The Champions League, for example, is so much more condensed than it usually is, so they will play every week in midweek as well. Same for the ones who are in the Europa League, like Spurs, for example. So certainly far more open than we would have thought at the beginning of the season or even a couple of weeks ago. And I think it makes it even more exciting.
What about Everton, Jules?
You know what, I like them. I think the issue could be the lack of depth a bit, except maybe in midfield. But even if Holgate comes back, we saw when Seamus Coleman got injured in the derby on Saturday that Godfrey came in at right back, but he's more of a centre-back. He's just arrived for Norwich. You know, hadn't even trained that much with the first team anyway. So I think maybe depth could be an issue. But if certainly Calvert-Lewin or James and people like that, Alan, Doucouré, stay at that kind of level, and like Stevie said, they would have so much time to recover between Premier League games, all week to prepare whoever they play next in the Premier League, to work on set pieces, to work on their defensive shape, to work on so many things that other big teams won't be able to work on because they will be preparing a game, playing a game, recovering for a game, preparing a game, playing the game, recovering for the next game, that you can't work on anything, really. You don't have the time, whereas Everton would have plenty of time to do so. So I think we should take them seriously. We will still have to wait, you know, on a bit of a longer term now on what they can do, but certainly so far they've been really impressive. And again, you can't underestimate how much having just one game a week will be a big difference compared to the others.
Meanwhile, Jules, I know this is going to be difficult for you to comprehend, but maybe some people haven't yet listened to the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast. For those very, very, very rare few, just sum up what you said about the punishment you felt that or feel that Pickford should face.
I just think it's really unfair that Virgil van Dijk will sit out the next 8 months of football, probably missing the Euros, missing all of the season, and Jordan Pickford will play on Saturday. I find it so unfair. I find it outrageous, to be honest. And, OK, maybe I went a bit too far or too strongly when I said that he should be banned for as long as Virgil is out. But to make people understand that this should not happen. There's something wrong in the system. If you can put out a tackle like this. And I'm not saying that Pickford did it on purpose. Of course, you don't go out to injured people. But yeah, he went so strong and he knew exactly what he was doing. I'm sorry, but you don't go on a tackle like this just thinking, oh, you know, that's not a serious tackle. It was a horrendous tackle. And there's something wrong in the system if he can walk out back on the pitch at the weekend when Virgil van Dijk would be watching from his hospital bed on television whatever Liverpool are doing. I just think it's so unfair. And I think it's not right. It's wrong. And, OK, maybe you find a middle ground between being banned for as long as Virgil is out and not being banned at all. But I just think I don't want those tackles ever again to happen in football. And to do that, they have to be punished really, really strongly.
Should he be out as long as Van Dijk is out, Stevie?
No, I think that's a little stretch. Listen, I think if a player is clearly seen to go and try and injure a player and actually succeed, then I think you need to start talking about harsher punishments. But the fact is that Pickford's just not wired correctly. There's something missing between his ears. And this was an accident. It wasn't picked up by the officials. And the rules have to be changed that if the officials don't pick up on something like this, then the league itself has to step in and give him the usual three-match ban. And I don't think anybody would argue against that. Again, it sounds very much like common sense, which unfortunately doesn't usually get too far with these kind of people, these committees. But that's what should happen. It should be three games for a reckless and endangering an opponent challenge that wasn't meant. It was completely an accident. And for Virgil, it's just unfortunate that he's come out on the worst side of it. Liverpool, of course.
Jules, I understand the sentiment of your argument, but you could argue that Richarlison's tackle was just as bad, maybe even worse, yet Thiago not facing that same sort of layoff, which then becomes difficult, doesn't it, when it comes to trying to bring in disciplinary action towards these players.
But I think you have to take in consideration what happened to the players who got tackled. So Richarlison will have the same ban, then, well, Pickford will have nothing, which is crazy, but potentially both would have had three games banned.
Jules,
had Pickford been sent off as well. You can't have the same suspension for someone who takes out a player and injures him, and he's going to miss out the rest of the season, compared to a tackle where the player's on the end of the tackle gets, you know, is okay and can finish the game and maybe has a little niggle. But I think you also have to take in consideration what happens to the poor guy who got tackled in the way he did. And I just think it's wrong to give just the same punishment to, oh, it's a straight red, so it's 3 games banned for everyone. I don't think it should work like this.
Jules, you can't have a situation where the punishment is only on what the outcome is. You know, if somebody never plays the game again because of an injury, are you saying that the guy that did it shouldn't play ever again? It should be taken on the merits of the challenge. If the challenge is just one of those things and it's accidental, as opposed to somebody looks as though they're going to harm somebody, then you start thinking about harsher punishments. You can't just throw a blanket over it and say, well, depending on the outcome, because the silliest things happen and somebody ends up turning their ankle and breaking it or whatever, and then they're out for 12 months. I mean, that wouldn't... I mean, that's not common sense, is it, really? Come on.
Jules?
No, I mean, I understand your point. My point is, I just don't think you should punish like tackles like that the same way, especially when one is out for 6 months, 8 months, a year. I don't know. What happens if Virgil van Dijk can't play football again? What happens if Virgil van Dijk never finds the same level that he was for the last 3 years? And Jordan Pickford, well, again, is going to play on Saturday.
By your logic, Pickford should never play
right,
again.
No, but that's too strong. Of course, that's too strong, and that's never going to happen. But I just think that the system is wrong. If Jordan Pickford can walk out again on Saturday and play for Everton, why are we not sure when Virgil van Dijk will play football again?
Stevie,
a three-match ban is not enough for a tackle like this, in my opinion.
Stevie, a daft question. You talked about Pickford not being wired right. Is it just because he's a goalkeeper, he doesn't know how to tackle properly, and that kind of leads us down this road?
Listen, Richarlison's not a goalkeeper. You saw how he made a challenge. Mm. You talk about not being wired right. This guy's not. I mean, it's good if he's on your team, because I'll tell you what, he gives any defender a hard time every time he steps on the park. So you can't put it down to Pickford being a goalkeeper. It's just a rash challenge. He's come out, he's made the decision, and he's left his feet. And once you leave your feet, then you're in trouble. So, listen, considering what Richarlison did, I don't think you just turn around and say it's a goalie's challenge. It's just a challenge from a guy who's kind of hot-headed and who, under pressure, is liable to do something wrong. And he did something wrong, that's for sure.
I'm intrigued, Stevie, just from a personal perspective, if you've ever been in this situation where you've hurt someone or seen someone hurt or been hurt yourself, like how much guilt is there, like in the evening, or is that just asking for a generic answer on what is down to individual character?
None whatsoever. I have challenges on me that could have been a way lot worse, and I've put challenges on people that they've ended up missing games and maybe could have been a lot worse. But at the end of the day, you go for the ball, you know, and sometimes you time it correctly, sometimes you get it wrong. And it happens both ways, as I said. You can't go around worrying and second-guessing yourself. Listen, if there's a ball there to be won, you go for it 100%. And as professional footballers, you accept the outcome. Now, again, the only time you do not accept the outcome is if it's done intentionally. That's what changes it.
Do you feel any of those two challenges that we saw at the weekend were intentional, Stevie?
I actually don't. Richarlison is a hothead. You know, the guy goes around leaving his foot in constantly. He's somebody you're talking about. When you go home, do you sit and have guilt? No, he'll have regret. He won't feel guilty what he did, but he'll regret that he got sent off more than anything else, actually, because he's let his teammates down. But as far as his intention, I don't think he intentionally goes to hurt Alcantara, right. And I certainly don't think Pickford went to hurt Virgil van Dijk. But the referee got one decision right and one decision wrong.
Interesting stuff, boys. Thank you very much. More of Stevie and Jules on Extra Time, which you can check out over on our YouTube channel. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. I don't know how we've coped for the last couple of days, but the Champions League is back. Some big matches for you as well on Tuesday. Jules with me to look ahead to a couple of them in more detail. PSG against Manchester United. What's revenge in French, Jules?
It's revanche.
Perfect. I imagine that is very much the storyline in France, isn't it?
Yeah, you're right. That's exactly that. March 2019, when United came to the Parc des Princes and won it, qualified, went through the last minute with that penalty from Marcus Rashford, 3-1. Of course, there's going to be a bit of that, although it's not the same drama because this one is in the group stage. Mm-hmm. So whoever loses, if there's a loser, no one will be out of the Champions League. So it's a bit different, slight different dynamic. However, it's a big game, I think, for both teams, really, because PSG have gathered momentum now in the league. They're in good form. They had players missing at the weekend, but they won. Now they've got big players coming back, like Di Maria, Neymar, who will start up front with Kylian Mbappe. Danilo Pereira, I'm told, will start as well to make his debut, the Portuguese international, in midfield. So this is really good. And for United, we've had the ups and downs season, really, so far. And I think it would be very good for them before facing Chelsea at the weekend, not to go to Paris and come back with a hammering. So they have players missing as well. No Maguire, no Cavani, of course, no Eric Bailly either. But let's see how well they can do, especially defensively. You can expect a by five against PSG and try to at least play on the counter and create some chances to score goals for them.
Yeah, Harry Maguire tweeting out he was disappointed that he wasn't going on this trip. That's going to be interesting to see how Solskjaer fills that back line against, we all know, the PSG potent attack.
Exactly. I mean, he will have to tinker, really. It's DIY job because no Bailly either, where you could think, OK, Bailly can come in for Maguire, so you probably will have a back five, I suspect, because you have to try to reduce all the spaces that you could give to PSG and then yourself play on the counter. I think Luke Shaw will have to play centrally, Lindelof will play centrally, then do you bring McTominay down from midfield to play a centre-back? Do you bring him for Fosu-Mensah in, but he rarely plays? I think there's a lot of questions around that back five or that back four for United. However, they also know that PSG would like to have a lot of the ball and we leave a lot of space in behind the back four. So Rashford, whoever plays, Bruno Fernandes, Martial, Van de Beek, whoever is there, Daniel James even with his pace, can certainly find that space and create problems for PSG. I think it would be quite fascinating opposition of style between the two and quite a fascinating tactical game.
And another fascinating tie at Stamford Bridge, Chelsea taking on Sevilla. I'm not going to take a 0-0 in this one, Jules.
And you're right, Dan, because I can tell you now, I don't think it's going to be 0-0. We saw all the fragilities defensively of Chelsea at the weekend against Southampton in that 3-3 draw. We saw them at West Brom a few weeks ago as well for another 3-3. I think they conceded so many chances. They left that back four so much exposed. They've got Kepa in goal. We're not sure if Mendy can be back for the game, but Kepa has been a disaster. And on the other hand, you've got Sevilla who play so well going forward. They lost at the weekend as well, but maybe they had their mind already on this Champions League match. So fascinating contest again. Remember, first game of the group stage last season, Chelsea and Lampard lost at Stamford Bridge against Valencia, another Spanish opposition. So for Sevilla, I think the Europa League is their stuff, no problem. But they also want to make a mark in the Champions League now, and this is a good way to start it.
Julian, as always, thank you very much. A lot more talk on the Champions League and indeed what transpired this weekend. Be sure to check out the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast, which is available to listen to now.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
M&S announced a series of initiatives today to combat racism and advocate for social justice and increase representation in the sport with a number of different measures you can see here as we welcome Shaka Hislop to the show. Shaka, your overall thoughts on this?
I think it's a very good step by MLS. I think they've addressed a lot of the issues. Just speaking from my own first-hand experience in talking to a number of ex-players, black ex-players, who were asked about their reluctance to get into football management. And a lot of those players that I associate with and I speak with, would cite that the fact that they weren't able to get interviews for top coaching jobs, so didn't see the reason to go through the process of getting all those badges up to UEFA Pro license, in an effort that you won't even get a foot in the door with. I think MLS does that, addresses some of those frustrations, and then goes a step further. Earlier today, I was reading an interview by Eddie Newton, formerly of Chelsea, now managing Trabzonspor in Turkey, and he was saying that until there are changes at boardroom levels, you won't see black players being given a fair shot at the top managers' jobs. And I think what MLS are doing here are laying the groundwork to see that change that everybody is calling for, that systemic change, that systemic need for diversity at every single level, youth coaching, head coaching, and in particular at administrative and boardroom levels. That's where long-term significant change is going to come from, and I think MLS are trying to shape the framework in moving the game towards that and towards real equality and social justice.
And of course, Shaka, it looks very positive on paper. It's about now that putting it into practice.
Yes, absolutely. And that always is the difficulty with it. But I think in an effort to get a proper product in practice, because right now, we are all these issues, all these initiatives that are being proposed, we're not quite sure how it's going to work next year, 5 years' time, the kind of effect it's going to have in 20 years' time. But I think what you have is a significant attempt at addressing the issues. And then if need be, you can readdress in a year and make changes and see what it looks like in 5 years. And hopefully we have the social change, the social impact that this moment has been calling for in that 20 years' time. It's no good anymore to sit around and talk about what needs to be done hypothetically. We have to start taking these steps. We have to start implementing these actions. And if there are mistakes that are in them, if there are things that need to be changed, then you change them when you recognize that. But we cannot simply continue to sit on the sidelines, talk about these things hypothetically, in the hope that one day, on the end of all this hypothetical discussion, we come up with something that works. We won't know if it works until we put it into action. And that's what MLS are doing. And I have to say, hats off to them for taking this step, because it is significant. The moment calls for it. And I applaud MLS for taking this step when it seems that many may be still a little bit reluctant to. Credit to them for leading the way, not just in US sports, but in world football.
Shaka Hislop, as always, thank you very much. Just a reminder, ESPN FC with you 7 days a week. The next few shows, of course, are all about the Champions League.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All the German sides then in action over the next couple of days on Tuesday and Wednesday as they kick off the group stages of the Champions League. You've got Lazio against Borussia Dortmund, Leipzig take on Istanbul, Inter Milan against Borussia Mönchengladbach, and it's Bayern Munich against Atleti. And that's the game that we will start with as we welcome in Steve Cherundolo and Archie Rintutt to the show. Steve, let's start, shall we, with that Bayern game. A good, interesting tie for the neutral, this one.
Yeah, it's a great kickoff match for the Champions League for Bayern and as well as for Atletico. So, you know, anytime your first match of the season in a new Champions League, it's a game you definitely don't want to lose. So, look, it's a classic Atletico Madrid game. They go in, they're going to defend well. But this Bayern offensive has been so potent and so good, especially this past weekend in Bielefeld, winning 4-1. So it should be a really good matchup. I'm excited to see what approach both coaches take. But it's going to be a great, great first fixture day.
This one of the standout ties out of all of them, Archie.
For sure. And the way that Bayern Munich are playing right now, the way that Robert Lewandowski is going up front, 7 goals in his first 4 Bundesliga games so far this season, albeit 6 of them coming in the last 2 games, it's really quite tantalising. It's quite a tantalising prospect. Also interested to see who will start on the left, at left back for Bayern. Will it be Lucas Hernandez, who's been having a better season so far than Alphonso Davies? The last time that we saw Alphonso Davies start in the Bundesliga was against Hoffenheim, and that was probably his worst game that he's had for them. So it's, I'd say, the first real dent that Alphonso Davies has had in this last year. It's just been up, up and up. So what will intrigue me here is to see whether Lucas Hernandez continues to play here. Obviously, there's a lot of pressure on Bayern to pick him, given the fact that they paid 80 million euros for him only last summer, or whether Alphonso Davies is going to get a chance here against a side that, as Steve, I think, hints at, that we would expect to lie pretty deep. I can't think of too many teams who would want to do that against this Bayern side, but I think Atletico are bold enough to do so.
Steve, Bayern for the win, is that what you're going for?
I think so. I think it's it's a very well-coached Atletico team. We've seen over years, and they know what they're doing. They have the experience, as Archie said as well, to sit back deep and defend and to cover the important areas against Bayern Munich. But like I said, like we said before, Lewandowski and there's so many other threats. Goretzka is also a real threat going forward. And Thomas Müller is fun to stride again. So I do see Bayern coming out on top. It's going to be a close one, as always, against Atletico. It's going to be hard fought. Bayern are going to have to work hard. But I do see them coming out just a bit up front.
Archie, I don't care about your pick. What I want to know is why you chose to wear a white jumper with a white background when you were coming on.
Because I wanted to try and vary what I've been wearing.
What, you're just going to be a floating head with white on white. Meanwhile, Borussia Dortmund against Lazio. And I tell you what, Steve, anyone who saw Lazio at the weekend will know that Borussia Dortmund will fancy their chances. They have been terrible at the start of this season. Meanwhile, Dortmund coming into this game off the back of an impressive victory away against Hoffenheim.
Absolutely. Borussia Dortmund has been good this season. Lazio has been everything but good. But they do have a trump card, and that is Immobile, a former Dortmund player. And anytime you're a goal scorer as he is, and he's proven over year after year that he can put the ball in the back of the net, it's a special game for him. It's an emotional game for him. And he's going to want to score against his ex-club, for sure. He may not celebrate, but he's definitely want to score. And he's been in a little bit of a slump as well as his team. And those are the type of moments and games that can get him and his club out of these bad spots.
Archie, I feel like every time I talk about Dortmund, I ask the same question. But is this it's a good test for the youngsters, this?
It is. Maybe we'll see Marco Reus get a start as well. I think that going forward, Reus is going to be playing more of a role off the bench for Dortmund, such as his record with injuries in the past. But he showed, along with coming off the bench with Erling Haaland at the weekend, just how big a player he can be. Don't underestimate as well the size of the result that Dortmund have just got in Hoffenheim, of course, where Bayern Munich lost 4-1 in Hoffenheim's last home game. So Hoffenheim has been a place where Dortmund have traditionally fallen short over the last few years. And for Dortmund to rest the likes of Roman Bürki in that game, Erling Haaland, Marco Reus, Jude Bellingham, and to come away with the points, I think big confidence boost for Lucien Favre, who's very quickly put under pressure. And I think, given the way that Lazio played at the weekend, Dortmund should be favourites for this.
The biggest test of all the German side has surely got to be for Borussia Mönchengladbach, taking on Inter Milan. Inter coming into this game off the back of losing the Milan derby. Gladbach will do well to get anything from this game, you feel, Steve?
Yeah, absolutely. For them, it's a win-win situation. And the way Gladbach has been playing, and the way Marco Rose is a fantastic coach, but he's grown up in this Red Bull system, Leipzig and Salzburg. It's an all-out attack from minute one, and I do see them going to try and do that. They're going to be brave in Milan. They're going to go out and try and do the same stuff they've been doing all season, and they've been very effective in the first 15 minutes of this game. So it's a great way to knock a big one on his heels right off the start. So I look more of that power of football that we're going to see that we've seen so far this season. But on the other hand, Inter Milan is such an experienced team, finding themselves in the finals last year of the UEFA League, European League. So it's been a fantastic run for them. A very experienced team, and they've come off a bad loss, so they have something to prove as well.
Gladbach got any chance in this one, Archie?
I think they do, but they have to up their game physically, and that's been a problem, I think, so far this season. The whole idea of Marco Rose's football, like the key component that you have to have there is intensity and physicality. And I don't think that they've had that in their first four Bundesliga games, not in the same way that they were able to eventually hit their stride last season. They did have a bit of a slow start then, but they still have players who can hurt Inter. I look at Marcus Thuram, for one, who with his trickery, with his movement, I mean, pace is a prerequisite at this level, but I think that he's somebody that could cause them problems as well. I just look at someone like Stevie Leiner at right back. He needs to have a good game. Like, he is something of a bulldog there, and he really sets the tempo for their pressing. So if Leiner has a good game, he got a bit of a knock at the weekend, then I think that this could be a close one. But having seen Inter when they came to Germany for the Europa League and seeing just how physical and aggressive they are, Gladbach have to be on their game.
Gentlemen, as always, always great to chat with you on a Monday. Archie, put some pictures up. Do something with that. Leipzig remain top of the table. They're in action against Istanbul. As we said, they're 1 point clear of Bayern and Borussia Dortmund. The games then continue thick and fast. Remember, the Bundesliga on ESPN this season. On Saturday, Bayern Munich take on Eintracht Frankfurt. That game at 9:30, followed by Borussia Dortmund against Schalke. That's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much, as always, for everyone who has been on. Be sure, though, to stay tuned. Extra Time with Stevie and Jules. Welcome into Extra Time. Jules and Stevie with us to answer some of your tweets. Shaka was supposed to be here, but technical issues means that he's not. First question says, I saw Shaka recently admit VAR isn't as precise, scientific as it is portrayed. Are the other guys ready to admit the system is an art and not a science? It's a useful tool to have, that hard cutoffs undergrounded, in fact, seem to be undermining the game. Oh, some big words there, Stevie. What do you think?
I'm absolutely a fan of VAR.
Right.
Listen, so whoever sent that in would rather the referee just took a guess all the time and got it wrong. You know, I'd love to see the stats. I would probably guarantee that the stats are way in favour of having VAR as to not having VAR. Yeah, there's no question in my mind that a lot of decisions that would have gone the wrong way have gone the right way, and that's what it's all about. And whilst you've got a human involved, somewhere along the line there's always going to be errors. And if you put somebody in charge of VAR who's incompetent, now what you get is what you had against Everton and Liverpool. A guy who was just so incompetent that he panicked and just lost the plot and got everything that mattered wrong. So just because of that doesn't mean that you throw it all away and go back to just a referee gambling all the time. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Stevie, you were never sent off in your career. Would you have been sent off with VAR?
Probably I.
Yeah?
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. But you would have changed your game. You wouldn't have kicked people quite as hard, no?
Well, you just want to be able to kick people, period.
A disappointment on your face.
There's so many cameras on today that you... No, yeah. Well, that's the thing. You know what? The players today don't understand the enjoyment of a right good physical challenge.
Right.
Going into a 50-50 ball and ramming into each other. I mean, it's part of the game. Well, it's part of the game I was brought up with. Players today aren't brought up like that. That's why they dive around and fall over when they get flicked, because A, it's acceptable, and B, it's an easy way out. But they don't understand. They're missing out on that physical part of the game, which for me, I really enjoyed.
Oh, it's like Gab and Jules. Every day they do the podcast, coming together, 50-50. Yeah. There's only one winner of that battle, Jules. Where do you stand on VAR, Jules?
Yeah. And it's not me. I just think, you know, VAR is good. It's who's behind VAR, the problem. And again, you know, Dave Coote, who was in charge of VAR in that Merseyside derby on Saturday, failed VAR. It's not VAR didn't fail anything. I think it's him who failed it, VAR. And by the way, that was not his first time. Last season, he had another shocker when he was in charge of VAR as well at one of the Spurs games. So this is not the first, it's not even the first time. And I think unless or until you start using competent people behind VAR, and you know, or at least people who will take the right decision with the help of VAR, that's the only thing really. Because I do think, like Stevie said, that VAR has done a lot of good things in football. But when you have an issue like this, like we had on Saturday, it just bring back all this debate about VAR or no VAR, and I think it's a real shame.
Jules, just talk about the Van Dijk incident. Obviously, they were looking at the offside, because if he was onside, they were looking at the penalty. How can anyone in the world who knows anything about football looking at a screen, look at that challenge from Pickford and think, you know what, I don't think that's a red card?
I mean, it's beyond me. It really is beyond me.
But then
me.
He shouldn't have a job, should he? Like, I'm not here trying to get people sacked, but this is your job, to be an official, to be able to make these sort of...
Why did Michael Oliver?
Yeah, both of them. Because Michael Oliver,
get on his ear and say, well, hold on a second, what happened here? Mm. Can you have a look and see what happened? I mean, that would be the rational thing to do. What happened here? Instead of just going over, and then the guy's getting treatment, and you just don't bother. It doesn't make any sense.
And he's getting treatment for a long time as well. Someone has got the time to tell Michael Oliver to go over to the monitor just to check what happened. But there we go. There we are. Stevie and Shaka, Shaka's not here. Stevie, did you ever have a connection with one of your teammates as strong as Son and Kane have had recently?
Absolutely. I had a couple. I had one with John Barnes down the left-hand side when I played behind him. And I did similar with Ray Houghton when he played in front of me on the right-hand side. So yeah, I mean, it's amazing the difference not having to actually think about things makes when you're playing at such a pace as well. Because I would do things without even having, you know, if I'm going forward, obviously I'm thinking, right, okay, who's going to cover me? How far can I go? Can I go all the way? Do I have to be clever? Do I have to come inside and just be corny, or can I go for it? But with Banzi and Ray, I could just go, because I knew that if we lost the ball, one of the two of them was sat for me. And so when you're able to do that, it's absolutely huge. It makes such a difference.
Yeah, on the flip side of that, how difficult...
That's what you get.
How
that's
difficult
you get
is it when you, don't, when you don't have that connection?
That's what you... Well, it completely restricts you, because the one thing you can't do is just gamble and disappear. So if you're not sure, then you can't go. I mean, there's some hard and fast rules, you know, unwritten rules. You know, you can't just disappear and leave a hole in the defence where you're supposed to be, unless either you know somebody's covering it or there's nothing going to go wrong. And so it completely changes the way you play. You know, if you don't have that connection with the guy who's looking after your back, then it's a difference of 15 to 20 yards further up the field. I mean, that's huge as far as attacking's concerned.
Jules, Thierry Henry and his pomp, all Kylian Mbappe. They've won the same medal to France, but in an 11 with one up top. Who would you pick?
Oh, that's harsh. That is so hard.
It's Henry, isn't
it? It's really hard. Why do I always have those questions, or who would you pick? I mean, the thing is, Thierry at his best had finished his evolution from being a wide player and had moved to a centre forward, the best in the world. I think Kylian, he's in this process. He's in the process of moving from being wide, where he pretty much played a lot of his career, or as a second striker, to being that centre forward almost on his own, or the main guy up front, which I think he hasn't really finished that evolution, that process. So I would go for Kylian. I love Kylian too much.
Wow, Jules, you really do.
I tried to explain, and then in the end, I just went, oh.
I think everyone stopped listening, to be fair, Jules, so it don't matter. A side which finished top scorer. A side which finished top scorers in the Premier League the last three seasons. Why do Manchester City look so dull and out of sync in attack so far? Frank Leboeuf lambasted them at the weekend, saying they're just so boring to watch at the moment, Jules.
Yeah, I was at the game on Saturday. I thought it would be slow. However, I thought the front two of Sterling and Aguero actually caused problems to the Arsenal back five. So I thought Guardiola got that right. But I just think when you lose Kevin De Bruyne for this game and maybe a few to come, and David Silva, you lose so much creativity that Phil Foden and Bernardo Silva are just not there yet. Silva, Bernardo played quite deep in the game, almost on the same line as Rodri. And then I still think Foden is obviously not the finished article, but he's still struggling at times to take the ball and being the main creator. And I think a lot of it, of why they were boring on Saturday, it was a boring game anyway, overall. Even Arsenal were not that great going forward. But I just think when you don't play with De Bruyne, and when you've also lost David Silva a few weeks ago, it's just, you're going to struggle to adapt. And when your fullbacks, one is Ake on the left-hand side, who is not an attacking fullback at all, and on the other side is Joao Cancelo, who's not really sure where he's supposed to be, if he's a midfielder or right back. You struggle a bit for creativity, maybe, and for, you know, fast transition going forward. Maybe that's the reason, but I do believe, like Frank said, they've got a lot of work to do going forward.
For Jules, do you think Griezmann should be benched or sold, since he wants to play in the same position as Messi, and Messi looked dysfunctional and less touches on the ball against Getafe? Obviously, Barca board made a bad choice bringing him in.
I think, you know what, I think he deserves, and I'm not objective at all, so here I go, you know, I admit it. Give him a run in that number nine position with Messi behind him, and let's see what happens. That was the first time he was playing there this season, against Getafe of all teams, and it's so hard to play against Getafe because they're so solid defensively, they're so well organized, there's no space at all, it's a nightmare to play against them. And And Griezmann, to be fair, had a nightmare, and Messi was not very good either. But I think he deserves a run there. And then let's see, you can't judge him on one game in his favourite position. It's too harsh on him, I think. And I think he deserves a few more games there. Let's see. Let's play him there in the Clásico at the weekend. Let's see how he does. You know, he will get those chances and he will score them, and like he did against Getafe or even before the international break. I really believe that if you want to get the best out of him, that's the best position. Then he will be down to him to deliver. And if he doesn't deliver, then you can bench him. You can play him back on the right. Do whatever you want with him. But at least give him the chance to show what he can do with a few more games, not just one game, and then say, OK, he was rubbish. Let's get him out.
Any more sneezes for you, Stevie? You all right?
I tell you what, kept that one in well, didn't I?
Well, yeah, no one noticed. Nobody noticed. final question for you, Steve. Final question for you, Steve. Of course, the Scottish Premiership now on ESPN Plus. If you're in the States, your thoughts on Celtic losing to Rangers?
Ah, your beauty! Yes!
Ah, there we are.
Come on, the teddy bears! Yes! If it's... We've got to stop 10 in a row. Come on, boys! Come on, Stevie G!
Come on! What was that bit?
No, after... I was very disappointed for Celtic.
What was that bit you said after Stevie G, Stevie?
I was extremely disappointed.
What was the bit after Stevie G?
Yeah.
What did you just do?
Nothing. No. It was that... You know that... You know that guy, Farley?
Darren Farley, the impressionist?
You know the guy Farley?
Yeah.
Darren Farley, yeah. He always Well, he always starts with... in my head, it sounded like that. Just didn't quite come out the same way.
Ah, oh, fantastic. Thank you very much, gents.
Yes,
we'll be back
tomorrow.
Yes, I was
very disappointed with the Celtic boys. Unlucky.
Tomorrow, of course, it's the start of the Champions League. We'll have everything you need to know. Stevie Nicol, the impressionist, who would have known? Until then, goodbye.